Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in the strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. If you've been listening at all, you know I've been on a much-needed vacation with my honey. We were in Florida for some rest and relaxation, had a great time. And I have to tell you, though, I've really missed you. And I hope you enjoyed hearing the series on my book, Your Beautiful Purpose, last week. We took clips out of the DVD companion and just talked about the different phases and stages of walking out the call of God on your life. And if you missed any of those and you want to hear them, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Well, you are in for a treat today. I'm very expectant about today's show. We're going to talk about some of those unexpected joys and challenges of becoming a parent, specifically becoming a mom. But men, I want you to tune in and stay tuned because you're in for a great conversation today. My guest is Lisa Jo Baker. She's written a beautiful, poetic book titled Surprised by Motherhood, Everything I Never Expected About Being a Mom. And so here's my question for you to ponder, and I asked it on Facebook. I already got a lot of great responses there. The question is, what about parenthood has most surprised you? What about parenthood has most surprised you? Stephanie says that I could love someone so much that I could burst unconditional love. Jacqueline says the depth of my compassion and feelings when my children walk through the valley. It's as if I'm walking right alongside them. Roxanne says, my sons think I'm smart. That's her biggest surprise. So what about you? What has surprised you most about parenting? Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get the conversation started. Lisa Jo Baker is a social media manager for Dayspring, the Christian subsidiary of Hallmark, and the community manager for their website, Encourage. Lots of great authors. In fact, a lot of the authors at Encourage we've had on the show. So you check it out. In is I-N, Courage. And as a child of South Africa, Lisa Jo grew up on Karoo dust, purple, I'm going to say this wrong, jacaranda trees, and the stories of Zululand. Lisa Jo and her husband and their three children make their home under the cherry blossoms just outside Washington, D.C. And you can find her resources at our website on her author page at myfaithradio.com. Lisa Jo, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's so good to be here.
And as you and I chatted before the show, there's just a number of mutual friends we have who've been saying to me, you've got to meet this girl. And just the few minutes we got to chat before the show, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show today.
Oh, it's a joy for me to be here.
Well, we love to start out our conversation talking scripture. We love the Word of God here at Live the Promise, and it's always so powerful to hear how God is speaking through His Word to our different guests. So I'm wondering if you have a verse that's either been jumping off the page at you these days, meaning a lot to you, or even maybe a life verse you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, sure. For me, it's really a verse from Philippians. It's the verse that in Him all things hold together, right? Mm-hmm. Christ is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. And the reason is, I think as a mom, especially in those newborn early months when you're juggling maybe more than one kid, and it feels like your life is just, you know, stuck on repeat, wash, rinse, and repeat, every day the same. For me, I needed to be reminded that all of those things, dirty diapers and laundry and 2 a.m. throw up and reheating the chicken nuggets, like all of those things hold together in Christ, and He holds me together. And they're just as significant as, you know, what my neighbor down the street is doing if she's leaving for her law firm in the morning, that all things hold together in Him.
Mm, and that He really does delight in every detail of our lives. Those hidden things that we feel seem to go so unnoticed by the rest of the universe, that He is so with us in that. It's a marvel when we stop and think about it, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes, and a relief. Just
yeah.
A relief to know that in our motherhood that we are seen. We're seen by the Creator who sings over us.
Love that. Well, you opened your book sharing about going into marriage and even into your young adult years, never wanting to have children. Share a little backstory with us and how your perspective was shaped.
Sure. You know, I was a 16-year-old gangly teenager growing up in South Africa, and I discovered that my mom had leukemia, and so for the next 2 years, she lived in a hospital about an hour and a half drive from where we were, and we didn't see her at home again. Mm-hmm. So we went to visit her, and slowly, as I was kind of blossoming into my own womanhood, I saw my mother fading before my eyes. And so I lost my guide, really, into womanhood and marriage and motherhood. And at the same time, I was part of a church that we love dearly. I mean, that just matters to us a lot. But it felt like they got a little bit lost in their attempts to comfort me. And when they would try to connect with me, one of the things that mattered a lot to them was talking to the women, the young girls, about, you know, what they were going to grow up to be and the families they were going to have. And they struggled with the fact that at the time I really wasn't interested in becoming a mother as I was watching my own mom die. And the harder they pushed, saying I needed to, you know, had to be a mom to be, you know, to truly be loved by Christ, the harder I pushed back. And it took, you know, the loss of my mom and the loss of my, what felt like the loss of my womanhood in the same period. And my mom died a week to the day after I turned 18. Mm. And it took many years after that for me to get to a point where my heart really felt softened to a place where I thought maybe I would want children. But I'm telling you, Jesus, he doesn't give up on us. He loves us so much, and he pursued me. And through some remarkable encounters, he convinced me that he loved me for me, not for my ability to bear children and not for my business card either. He loved me for me because he loved me first. And that was freedom for me. And in recognizing that and falling in love with the most handsome Midwestern boy with green eyes who saw me the same way, I realized that, of course, children are not an obligation. They are a gift, just like everything else he gives us is a free grace gift. So it seemed to me like he had saved the best till last, and I now have three very loud children.
Love it. Of course you do.
Yes, very loud.
When you think about those years, though, I mean, here you ended up, I think, becoming a lawyer. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, so you had a measure of significant intellect, but you also had something pushing back inside of you that was a message that really wasn't fully consistent as far as your worth is if you bear children. And so did you find yourself kind of walking away from your faith altogether to try to reconcile this thing that wasn't sitting right with you? Or did you feel like you could still walk with God, but you needed to push back on that message and kind of get your own feet under you?
Yeah, and my husband and I have often talked about this, and he's surprised I didn't walk away, because I didn't. And I think it's because my mom's faith was so deeply cemented into me from such an early age. And so this, I mean, the book is really a lot, not just about motherhood, but about the relationship between mothers and daughters, because it's such a powerful one for good, for bad. I mean, it's a strong one. And her faith was so solid, and I knew when she prayed that Jesus was real, because I could tell he was in the room when she talked to him, and her tiny little bald head and her little scarf wrapped around her, and she would talk to Jesus, and I knew he was in the room. And God continued to place godly women who mothered me just from a very wide and interesting bunch of locations even. I mean, there were women in Ukraine who mentored me who are missionaries there. There were women in Chicago and women in South Africa. And I got to watch them live lives that colored wildly outside the lines. You know, some of them were professional women. Some of them were moms. Some of them worked in the church. But the thing that they had in common was a freedom in Christ that he called them, and that's where they followed. And their children came along, you know, came along for the deal. And one of the women who was just so significant to me, her name was Colleen, and they were missionaries in Ukraine, and she had three boys. And nothing slowed her down. I mean, those boys went with her everywhere, on Soviet trains, on missions trips to Russia. They translated when they traveled all over Kiev. I was just astounded to discover women whose children were completely wrapped up in their calling. So their dreams hadn't ended in the labor and delivery ward. You know, God had given them big dreams and visions and callings, and their children were part of it, but not the finish line.
Which just goes to show you, Lisa Jo, that God really can handle our questions. If we stay in the game with him, I mean, I think sometimes we lose our way when we equate our questions. You know, that you're not allowed to have questions, and so that means you have to pull back and pull away. That's what you hear from young people nowadays, that because people are so afraid of their doubts and their questions. But for you to ask some legitimate questions about, do I actually have to bear children to have worth, and is that my whole calling? I love that you had enough grit in you to go, I got to wrestle this thing to the ground, and God was gracious and patient. And I love the story about, I think it was a man named Chuck.
Talk
about that encounter, and just how these are just divine ways God gently and lovingly affirmed your worth, but still led you on the path to motherhood.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that he is not afraid of our hard questions. I think he encourages it because it's a real relationship. And as parents, we know what that's like. We want our kids to come to us with their hard questions, right? Not to run away and hide them. So I felt like God was completely comfortable with those questions. And we had a day on the North Shore of Boston where I was going to college, and I was dating this cute boy called Peter. Hmm. And he and I were at church one Sunday, and we were kind of, you know, the quiet couple in the back. And sitting right in front of us was this man and his family, and this big black man named Chuck. And I hadn't met him before, and so Pete and I usually would just, you know, slink out after the service and go to Pizza Hut on the way home and back to campus. But for some or other reason, one Sunday morning, he turned around and looked at me and said, "Hi, my name is Chuck. I think I have a message from God for you." And I'm telling you, that is about the worst thing someone can tell you when you are an awkward college student. I mean, you just would rather be anywhere else, right? Like, you don't know what this person is going to say to you. So, of course, you have to say, "Sure, I'd love to hear what I'm certain will only be, you know, debilitatingly awkward conversation." But I stood there, and he said to me, he said, "You know, I'm so sorry to ask you this, but are you two married?" To me and Pete, and we were like, no, we're not. We're just dating. And he said, "I'm sorry, but are you planning to get married?" And I'm thinking, goodness, it's just as awkward as I imagined. Mm. And so Pete nodded yes, and it was just a really tender moment. And then Chuck said, "Are you planning to have children?" And at that point, I wanted to tell him, you know, I would rather eat glass and run away from home than have children. Mm. No, it's never going to happen. But instead, I just shook my head and looked at the floor. And he seemed relieved, and he looked at me and said, "Did you come from a church where it was really important for you to have children, for God to love you?" And I mean, at this point, I'm just crying, right, because it's so shocking to me that this complete stranger would ask me that. And I said, "Yes." And then he leaned in and looked at me and said, "Jesus wants you to know he loves you for you, not for the children you can give him." And I'm telling you, you know, you grow up believing in God, but we have moments where it feels like his spotlight is shining on us and he actually sees us, and it's simultaneously terrifying and comforting. And he looked at Pete and said, "And God wants you to know if you marry her, it has to be for her and not for the children she can give you." And it was the most beautiful testimony to the God who pursues us because he first loved us, not for anything we do back, but because it's who he is. It's in his nature. He loves us. And I felt like I lost about 100 pounds that week, and I was able to start breathing better. And it still was about a five-year journey for Pete and I before I thought I was ready, and God continued to bring people into my life, and he was just patient, a patient God who woos us right where we are. And those three kids he gave us, man, they sure were the best thing he saved till last.
Oh, I love this story. Just this story of Chuck, Lisa Jo, is a reminder for all of us that when we get into the kind of the humdrum of life and the monotony of life, and we lose sight of the fresh love of God, I think we all need to stop and remember what Chuck said, just and how it applies to each of us, that he loved us first. You know, while we were yet sinners, he loved us. And it's not that we loved him, but he loved us. And to pause and go, he loves us because we were made in his image, because we get into striving, we get into straining, and then we get despairing and we give up. And none of that was anything he sanctioned or drove, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't love us for our clean house or all caught up on the laundry or how successful we are at our work or how well, you know, well-behaved our children are. Like, none of that qualifies us. He loves us because of him, not because of what we did.
And we just need that reminder when we lose our way, because we all do. And so I got to know, though, driving home from that church service, what conversation, if you don't mind sharing, did you and Pete have?
I mean, I think we were both in shock. We basically faced the fact, like, okay, so I guess we're getting married, and it doesn't matter if we have children or not, and Chuck knows everything, and so does God. You know? Like, it's the moment where you think you can hide from God, and he, of course, sees you right down to the core of who you are. It was a discovery that love, you know, we metabolize love, and it feeds all the hungry places in us we didn't even know were there. I think that there was a hunger in me and such a sense of loneliness since my mom died and my church made me feel disqualified that got filled up that day. And Chuck and his wife after that had us over for one of the longest Sunday afternoon lunches we've ever done after church. And just that for us was a milestone moment for me and Peter, knowing who we are in Christ and what we want to be to one another.
Such a good word. Well, I'm talking to Lisa Jo Baker. She's a beautiful, beautiful writer. This book, Surprised by Motherhood, Everything I Never Expected About Being a Mom. This will be a great relief to you. As you read it, you're going to just take a deep breath and exhale, and you're going to remember that you're the object of God's affection, that He's writing a story with your life, that it's okay to have messy days. And maybe you or someone you love needs that reminder. It's in the thick of motherhood right now. We've got 5 copies, thanks to Tyndale Publishers for providing those. If you've got a question for Lisa Jo, now's your time to ask. I'm only going to open up the phone lines a couple times. I want to give Lisa Jo as much time as possible. So here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Or you can email your question, and if that's easier, that's Susie@myfaithradio.com, Susie@myfaithradio.com. So Lisa Jo, you're in this place. You're educated. You're a lawyer. You just got your plan set before you. But then God starts to kind of break through in His very gentle way to affirm not only your worth, but maybe a different path for you. So when did that start to change, where you start to be open to the idea, okay, maybe children might be a part of this story?
Well, it was when we were living in Ukraine, and I remember it to the day on my 30th birthday. We were eating lunch outside with this missionary family who'd really adopted us and taught us important life skills, like how to order pizza in Russian. And I really became convinced that day that what I wanted for my 30th birthday was a baby. And it was after 2 years of living in Ukraine, in a country where we were sort of immigrant equals, because I'm from South Africa originally and Pete is from the States, so we're always one of us is always the outsider. But in Ukraine, we were equal in that respect, and kind of learning all over again how to walk in a foreign culture. And just surrounded by a community who loved us. They didn't expect babies from us, right? They just loved us and just who we were and what our marriage was. And there was just a sense of excitement that, yes, you know, babies will come from this, but there wasn't a sense of waiting or keeping a checklist or checking in on us. Mm-hmm. And so I will never forget it, the afternoon of my 30th birthday, a beautiful afternoon at the Golden Gate Cafe in Kiev, Ukraine. I just, surrounded by all these kids eating chocolate ice cream, I realized that my heart had undergone this huge shift, that I thought, wow, you know, this marriage that we have, and we'd been married 5 years by then, I think children are what come next. So it was a shock to me, and I felt like I spent a lot of time nesting with words long before I nested, you know, with detergent, because I processed a lot with Peter. I wrote to my dad in South Africa to process some of my loss and my hurt regarding the church there, so that I would feel in my heart ready for this new human being to come onto what I hoped would be a fresh slate for their story.
Wow, that's just so wise. And did you get pregnant right away, can I ask?
Yeah, you can ask. Well, I'm bad at math, so we didn't get pregnant right away. And then when Peter took over keeping the math checklist, we did. It was really funny. So, yeah, we finished out our time in Ukraine, and we're on our way to the States to spend Christmas there before we went home to South Africa for a couple of years. And so I found out I was pregnant on Christmas Eve morning, and it was the best Christmas gift that year. It was so much fun to be able to share the news of the baby with all the American family, and then he was actually born in South Africa.
Wow, amazing. And you wrote, I'd aced college and law school and figured motherhood would go down the same way. It turned out my baby had completely different plans in mind. Say more about that, because another statement in your book is, you said, once you have a baby, it's like breaking up with yourself. So, you know, I think the big hurdle, the big one, at least one of them was, no, we're going to move into this and we're ready for kids. I'm going to have children. And then the next one was the reality of this baby coming into your life. I mean, talk about what a jar maybe that was to your whole perspective.
Yeah, I think, you know, for first-time moms, the problem is we are a lot focused on the pregnancy phase, right? And we read a lot of books about it, and then we don't spend a lot of time thinking about what comes after you've had the baby. So I had really focused my attention on having a great pregnancy, and then once the baby was born, I was shocked to discover I couldn't actually go back to my old life that I thought I would go back to. You know, there was this human being that really could put an FBI tracking device to shame for his pull on my life. I mean, I couldn't leave the driveway, let alone the neighborhood, without like 45 minutes of planning. So to me, you know, all those how-to books were devastating because I felt all the time that I was failing this test of motherhood. And it really felt to me that motherhood is a lot like breaking up with yourself. You know, everyone tells you you're going to fall in love with this baby, but nobody tells you how you have to break up with yourself to do that. And, you know, there are all these parts of my life I really liked, like sleeping in late and going to the movies at a drop of a hat and having friends over and, you know, eating my food hot or, you know, go to the bathroom without narrating what I'm doing while I'm in there. And this baby comes along and they huff and they puff and they just blow your life down. And it was shocking to me. I mean, the book is called Surprised by Motherhood, but I was flat out shocked by motherhood, how little time I had to myself, how overwhelmed I felt, and how unqualified I felt for the job.
Okay, and so you had legitimate fears about that. I mean, you think about it, you were a successful lawyer, you had your plan, and you could control your schedule. You could use your marker board, and it would work, you know. And so I can imagine someone listening going, okay, this is exactly why I don't want to go there, because it's shocking to think that I can control my world, but to enter into this realm, this universe, I lose all control, and I feel like my whole value and my identity are diminished. But you're really clearly saying in the book that is absolutely not the case, that yes, you are in a different universe. But talk about the redemptive value of that and how even maybe you've learned something of Christ and of yourself in that place.
Yeah, I think instead of your identity being diminished, your identity is put in the right size and space in the universe. Mm-hmm. Because parenting, I really believe, is the living parable that Christ gives us of what sacrifice looks like. So we get marriage first, right? And that's our first experience of really trying to put someone else above ourselves. But the problem with that is that partners are wonderful and they communicate great and it's beneficial for you and you get a lot out of it too. But in the beginning with parenthood, it really is all just giving. And I remember a very exhausted afternoon sitting talking to my friend Natalie and saying to her, you know, when will this baby love me? Like, right now all I do is give and give and give, and this baby just receives. And I really wanted to be like the moms in the magazines, you know, with the beautifully blow-dried hair lying on the bed and the baby's gazing at them, and they just look so lovely. And instead I hadn't showered in 3 days, and, like, I was so exhausted, and I wish I was napping and Natalie would leave because the baby was asleep. But she looked at me and said, everything that you're doing now will build the love. And it is the parable of loving first, right? As parents, we love first, and then our children love us back because of what we do for them. And that love is so powerful. I really have understood for the first time, because of the lens of parenthood, why a God would walk into the dark defenseless and offer himself as a living sacrifice for his children, because I don't know a mother who wouldn't do that. And so while it is difficult and it feels like breaking up with yourself, I've learned it's supposed to feel that way. It's not hard because you're bad at it. It's hard because it's designed that way. God gives us parenthood to break up with ourselves so we can understand what it looks like to be a living sacrifice for him.
And that is just such a critical lesson, no matter who we are, no matter what we do, because our illusion of control is just that. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
And you know, Chip Ingram, he's one of our programmers on Faith Radio, and he says, you want to see a catalyst to revival in your personal life? Surrender. He said, it's just the opposite of control. You're white-knuckling something, so let go and see what God does. And we so try to manage our world to keep ourselves in control, but we lose so much when we do that, don't we?
Oh, man, and parenting is the ultimate when it comes to having no control over anything, least of all your own body. You know, when you're pregnant, you realize, and I know for the moms who struggle to get pregnant, you know, that it is literally a miracle that God does in the secret dark of our bodies that we have no control over. And then when you have a four-year-old who, you know, yells at his babysitter how much he hates her, you realize you have no control then either. I mean, you constantly have to surrender to the work that Christ is doing in you, because you realize face-to-face that control is an illusion.
Yeah. And really, you know, Jesus draws near to the humble. And when we think we're in control and we put all of our energy into keeping our lives looking a certain way so we present a certain way, we miss something so, so significant in our walk with Christ. And so you're so right that parenting is such a catalyst to getting to that place of dependence, of humility. And yes, it's messy and chaotic at times, but it's sacred too, isn't it?
Oh, so sacred. I mean, I really feel like it's the holy of holies, the motherhood. And I feel uniquely qualified to encourage moms in this regard because I had the job that I thought was really important, and I worked in Ukraine as a counter-trafficking specialist on human trafficking issues, and I really thought that you know, that's what I was called to do and probably one of the most significant jobs you could do. But in becoming a mom, God has absolutely convinced me that in His eyes, the work we do rescuing women from trafficking is just as significant as the work we do raising kids at 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Lisa Jo Baker, got a beautiful book titled Surprised by Motherhood. Again, we'll take your calls if you've got a question. Otherwise, we're going to continue this great conversation. If email is easier, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Here's the number, 877-933-2484, and we will be right back.
But I know we're gone.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Having a great conversation today with Lisa Jo Baker. She's got a beautiful book titled Surprised by Motherhood, Everything I Never Expected About Being a Mom. Just coming off of Mother's Day, I wrote this on my Facebook page with a picture of my three sons who are now grown, all married and out of the house. And this is what I wrote. I marvel at how quickly time passes and how fast our kids grow up. A word of encouragement to you young moms whose plates are spilling over with life and responsibilities. I am telling you, you will blink and your kids will grow up and move out. Right now, while they're under your feet, enjoy the silliness, embrace their uniqueness, and encourage them to dream. Teach them how to pray and help them to know God's word so they'll recognize His voice. And do know that God smiles at you right here, right now. He loves your company and has every intention of giving you what you need to redeem each moment. Spend time with Him whenever you can. Pray about everything and do not let fear or worry have the last say. Also, refuse to turn your children into idols. It's easy to unintentionally look to our kids to make us look good, to validate our spiritual lives, and to prove our worth. But I'm learning that parenting is an offering, one given in faith to a God who works in ways we cannot see. Embrace faith, enjoy the journey, and have confidence in God. He loves your precious children even more than you do. Bless you, dear moms. And Lisa Jo, I'm wondering, you know, you talked about losing your mom at 18. Did fear come in for you as you gave birth to these three precious kids? I mean, having had your young adult years going, I don't think I'm going to have kids. And then God just really changing your heart and you've got these three treasures. Having dealt with such a loss of losing your mom, did fear become an issue for you?
Yeah, I don't know a mom where it isn't.
That's true.
I think it's the nature of motherhood, right? And the fear has never been for myself. It's always been for them. And I have, one of my special fears has been that I would die young like my mom did. I'll turn 40 this year, and 40 was the year she got sick, and she died when she was 42. And so I actually realize how young that is now because as a teenager, she seemed, you know, she's old. But she wasn't. And one of the things I struggled with is that my memories of her are all from a child's point of view. So we never knew each other as adults. We couldn't talk about parenting or motherhood together. I couldn't ask her, why did you say this or why did you do that? Because she's not here. And I have to tell you, writing this book was so cathartic for me. And by the time I got done, I turned to my husband and said, it's okay. Like, if anything happens to me, they will have this time capsule, this love letter of what they meant to me. So the book has been a real, in some ways, release from some of the fears I carry. But I think as a mom, it's a daily battle of handing that fear over to Christ and saying, I trust you. Because for a long time, I used to tell Him in my prayers, I don't. You can't love these kids as much as I do. You just can't, you know.
Yeah, I used to have a framed picture on our old house when our kids were growing up. It said, being a mom is like having your heart walk around on the outside of your body. And I think that's why the fear is so great, because you love so deeply with your soul that it's a very vulnerable thing. And you have two sons and then a daughter. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And so talk about the mother-daughter relationship. You write about this in the book and how that really was another level of healing for you in your memories of your mom. Talk about that impact.
Yeah, well, her name is Zoe, and she is three. She just turned three. And You know, I have brothers myself, and I have a dad, and my mom died when I was pretty young, and so I've really kind of been the girl who always had guy friends, and even the kids we sponsor through Compassion International are boys. And so I just expected we'd have another boy. That's what I thought would happen, and the chances are pretty good after you've had two, you'll have another one. And I was shocked to discover we were having a daughter. I felt shocked. I felt angry at God. I felt like He was giving this broken-down daughter a daughter to mother, and I didn't know how. I'm not a girly girl. I don't have pink in my wardrobe. I thought He'd made a mistake. And it took me the whole 9 months of my pregnancy to try to wrestle through this notion of having a girl. But I'm telling you, God, He loves us, and He loves our stories, and He loves to make sense of them and to show us how. And I discovered that I was pregnant with Zoe on the day of my 36th birthday, which was 18 years to the day since my mom had died. And on that day, when I felt like it was like this big black line painted down the middle of my life, you know, 18 years with a mom and 18 years without a mom, and now every year in addition would be one more year without her than with her. In that moment when I found out I was pregnant, I really felt like the Holy Spirit was speaking life. You know, God is a God of life, not a God of death. He speaks life over us. And so the word life was so powerful in my mind. And then months later when we discovered it was a daughter, we felt like He had named her Zoe, which is the Greek word for life. And in getting to know her, I tell you what, I have more memories of her saved up in that first year alone to fill 100 libraries. And it was realizing that this is how my mom loved me. You know, the memory loss is one-sided. It's just me who doesn't remember. But she, of course, loved me how I love Zoe. So, you know, mothering Zoe's helped me step into the shoes of my mom and recognize all those things I had missed out on. I feel like I'm getting to experience now from what would have been her perspective.
I couldn't help but laugh out loud at that memory of your mom being late to pick you guys up for school. I think you hugged her and you said you smelt butter on her breath, and you're like, you
like
were
popcorn
at the movies.
Yes, without us.
I think that was just hysterical because it's such a picture of our imperfection, but you know what I mean? In a beautiful way. But just talk about that, because you do that so well, where you honor her, but you're really honest about some of her humanity.
Yeah, you know, my mom, she loved stories and books and movies, and she just would get lost in them, I think, and not always be so present with us. And I think, you know, as a mom, I understand it better now, because parenthood is just really hard, and you get to a point where you want alone time. I mean, I don't know any mom at 9:30 at night who isn't going to lose it when a kid gets out of bed for the fifth time, because you're like, this is my me time. Please go away, child. Mm. And I came to realize that, you know, as parents of little kids, and mine are pretty young still, they're 8 and 6 and 3, but I see it with my 8-year-old. As he becomes more independent, the temptation is to just not check out, but give him more space, when really this is the age where he wants to know me more, right? He wants to talk to me and share his dreams with me. And the temptation is to say, well, I'm going to read this book, or I'm going to be on the computer, or I'm going to do X, Y, or Z other thing, you do your thing. And there's time for that, but I realized the lesson from my mom, and it's interesting because one of her sisters told me right at the end when she was really sick that she had said to her sister, be careful with your books. Don't lose yourself in your books because you'll miss out on your kids.
Wow.
And it has really been a reminder to me, because I can be on my smartphone, but I think our kids smell popcorn either way.
Yes,
know?
Exactly. And I think we tend to think just when they're young, you don't want them to choke on anything, but once you realize they're not going to choke on anything, you can leave them alone. Do you know what I'm saying? Where it's like their basic necessities are safety, so that they don't, you know, kill themselves. But it's like really in those adolescent years, they want our input. They're wide open. They're sponges. And it's when we want so much to be present, but it's easy not to be, because we finally want to get our own self back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my mom really struggled with that balance, and I struggle with it too. So I'm aware of it. So I know that there were just moments where she wasn't present. She was in the house, but she didn't feel present. You know, she wasn't available to talk to about things. And of course I'm much harder on her because it's in my memory, and it's probably, you know, skewed child's perception. And I know she loved us and she was there for all the important things, but I also know I know because that's how I feel. She was tired, you know, and she wanted space sometimes. And so I think motherhood is the constant dance of trying to figure out when to be present for them, but when to also build in rest for yourself, because I think that's necessary. And our kids need to learn that mom needs a break too sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, finding that balance, and I don't think we're ever going to figure it out perfectly because we live in a fallen, broken world. But, you know, remembering how it was with my mom is a good reminder to me to not just check out on the days when I'm tempted to.
Yeah, you're so right about that delicate balance. I co-host the show right after this with Focus on the Family's Greg Smalley. He's a family psychologist and counselor, and he always talks about the danger of a child-centered home where it can seem so noble and virtuous to have the whole world revolve around our kids. It's not a bad thing to say, I need some downtime. I love you better when I love the Lord most and I spend time with him, or I, you know what I mean? And I take care of my soul. But that has got to be so unique to each of us because there's not a one-size-fits-all. And, you know, it's something I noticed on your endorsements and just what I hear from women so often is your book really lands on women in a way that gives them just permission to be a work in progress, and you paint a very real picture of the messes and the joys of parenting. But I do so often, Lisa Jo, hear from moms who say so much of the literature out there on parenting makes me tired and makes me feel like a failure. Why is that?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know that I have an answer to that. I think we all aspire to a certain version of ourselves, and I think the books outline what the best looks like, right? These are experts giving the best advice, but in reality, no one can live up to that all at the same time. It's just impossible. Like, I might have one day where I do have a meaningful conversation with my son, but that might be the day then that everyone has chicken nuggets because I didn't have time to cook. There's just, it's impossible to do it all at once, and it's the reason I wrote the book, because it's the book I wish I had 9 years ago. Like, in my first 2 years of motherhood, I did not have a single mom admit to me that it was hard or that they felt overwhelmed. So I constantly felt like there was something wrong with me. You know, like, look at them. They're all doing fine. They show up at church. They look beautiful. They are so happy to have their children. They, you know, they're still involved in all these activities. What's wrong with me? Like, all I want to do is sit in bed and, like, watch movies and have the baby be quiet. You know, I just needed what I think of as the 2 a.m. truth of motherhood, you know, the version of motherhood that isn't beautiful, the version that's messy and feels out of control and that you're not going to make it. And I remember one of the most powerful moments for me in my motherhood story, and it's what I hope this book will be to moms, is that I was having trouble nursing. I felt completely overwhelmed and exhausted and that I was failing. And I called my oldest friend in the world. Her name is Dorothy. And I gave her a call and I just started crying and I told her what was going on, and she said, I will be there in 10 minutes. And I'm not kidding you. She arrived with A, chocolate cake, and B, a breast pump. And I was just like, grace and chocolate cake can cover a world of heartache, I'm telling you.
That is a true friend right
it
there.
It was just, and I think the problem is one of us, when as mothers, we have to be willing to go first and tell the truth and say we're not fine, because that's our reflex. How are you doing? I'm fine. But what if one of us were to admit that we're unfine? I think it liberates somebody else to admit that they're not fine too. And so the book is my attempt to do that, to go first and to say, listen, don't get me wrong. I think motherhood is a sacred, holy, righteous calling. I think it will change you and shape you, and you will fall in love like you didn't know you could. But I also think it will unmake you and make you question yourself and wear you out and run you ragged until you feel like you'll never have alone time ever again. And both of those are part of what makes motherhood such a sacred journey. And I just wanted somebody else to admit it, and I couldn't find a book like that. And I felt like, well, maybe I should write that then.
Yes, and you did it so beautifully. And one of the things that it's such a reminder, you know, as a mom who's an empty nester now, I got pregnant on my honeymoon, so we had kids right away, got married in our early 20s, so that's just how it worked out for us.
We have an opposite story pretty much, huh?
Yeah. And so someone once said empty nesting is like the honeymoon with the cash flow.
I know, I'm always like, why are these empty nesters complaining? They have it so good.
No, we have a great time, and so I'm very grateful. And our kid, we love our kids so much. But what I do realize as you're talking about this is that, you know, there's something, the sacred part for me when I look back at those years of chaos and mess and it feels like the days and nights blur together, is it is how Christ is with us. When we are babies in our faith, we have one foot in the world and one foot in the kingdom, and we are saved by grace, but we act so often like unbelievers when we're brand new. We just don't know. We've got these rough edges, and we're so dependent on so many levels. You know what I'm saying? And it's like,
oh yeah,
it took a redemptive perspective for God to see, while we are yet sinners, the value enough in us to die for us. And I feel like if there's something young moms can remember, is Lord, give them, and you know, a redemptive perspective to say, you may very well be raising a game changer, a life changer, a world changer in your home. And so the sacred mess is sacred. And so to be reminded of that day after day, because it's easy to lose it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just feels like a blur, you know. It really does. It's the old saying that the years are fast, but the days are slow. And it feels that way when you're in the trenches, and it's hard to remember that this is the holy, sacred calling that changes life, you know, lifetimes. It's generational. And the funny thing is, you have a book coming out, and then you feel like, you know, you worry about marketing, and you think about all of those things. And I was reading one of my favorite parenting authors, and he was talking about all of his books in the lifespan of books that are sold, when you compare it to one of his heroes of the faith and all of the books that he sold, he has way less than them. But that man is not remembered anymore anywhere. You can't even get his books. And that our books, that the work that we do and the jobs that we go to, those things will pass away. But the things people will remember about us are our children, right? Second, third, fourth generation will remember who was our grandmother or our great-grandmother. That is really the only lasting legacy that we're guaranteed, is what comes about through our children. So that has always been comforting to me, to put in perspective. Anything else I think is so urgent, that this legacy of being the mother of Jackson, Micah, and Zoe will be what goes down in the annals of history, not you know, the book I wrote or the work I did.
Mm. Okay, Nicole Olson wrote in, says, was pregnant with my first child at 16, and when I look back, I've always been a mom. People always say that you lose your identity if you don't go do things you did before you were mom. I guess I'm not really sure what that would look like for me when I feel like I've never been anything else. Is there any practical advice you can give me? Thank you. Thanks for that email. Nicole, what do you say, Lisa Jo?
Well, I think, Nicole, what can you teach us? Because clearly you've been doing it longer than us, and you know who you are. And I think for anyone who becomes a mom, it does feel like there's a haze over part of the rest of our lives from before that. And I think it's a part of growing up in faith. And I think, Nicole, you grew up before me. You know, you've been living this journey much longer than I have, so you're a mentor to me. I think that having children is a large step in growing up in our faith. And I don't think we want to look back. We want to keep looking forward into what Christ is building us, the character he's building us into, is where we want to keep running the race forward, not backwards. So I don't think there's a huge amount to regret about who we used to be, because he's growing us up into the best version of who he wants us to be.
Wow. And Nicole, you'll get a copy of Lisa Jo's book. And then Rachel writes in, how do you handle mom guilt? I have such a struggle giving myself grace when I've had a bad day, especially when I have several in a row. God bless you, Rachel. You'll get a copy of Lisa Jo's book as well. But what do you say, Lisa Jo?
Man, I know. I've struggled with it myself. Rachel, I've been a full-time working mom from the beginning, and it's looked different. Sometimes it's been out of the house. Sometimes it's been from home. I've had my kids in daycare, in preschool. We've had people come and watch them at the house. So I really appreciate that full spectrum, and I think the majority of women in the States today do work because it's necessary. And I would just encourage you to say that you are so brave. On those mornings when I had to get up early to leave while it was still dark, I really clung to Proverbs 31, she rises while it is still dark to provide for her family. That's what you're doing. You are providing for your family. And God gave you these children in the first place. You can give them back to him during the day, and he will watch them for you while they are entrusted to others who are watching them. And I would say, I wrote about this. I wrote a blog post called Grace for the Working Mother and Her Guilt. And I think it's the enemy's lie that whispers to us that we're failing as mothers because we're not there 24/7. Especially when it's something we wish we could do, but we are being responsible and we are providing for our families, and that is a courageous act. So I just tell you, well done you, and let Jesus come alongside you and love you, because he knows better than anybody what it looks like to be stretched and to feel like you can't manage. And there's the passage, you know, of the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark. It's funny, I had never really paid close attention to the verses before Jesus, breaks the 5 loaves and 2 fish. But what he says is, because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and the disciples did not even have time to eat,
mm-hmm.
he said, come with me to a quiet place and get some rest. And I think Jesus understands what it's like to live at the center of a life with so many small hands, so many demands, so many lists to accomplish. And he is just in it with us, and he says, come with me. That he walks the road with the working mom. I just believe it. So I encourage you, and I say thank you for being so faithful to your family.
And what about the mom who is staying at home, but just as Rachel says, has bad days where they just feel like I yelled more than I sang and I didn't get the dishes and the laundry done and I just can't seem to get out from underneath the pile. You know, that is where the condemning voice can just mm-hmm. defeat you before you even get out of bed. What word of encouragement or even advice might you have for someone like that?
Yeah, Christ, for the stay-at-home mom and her guilt. I mean, we all need it. We're all fallen and flawed, and none of us have perfect days. And there is no perfect balance. I remember telling my husband, what is it? Just tell me what I have to do, to find the balance. Do I need to work? Do I need to not work? Must I stay at home? Must I work part-time? If you just tell me what it is, I will do that thing. And it was liberating because he looked at me and he said, Lisa Jo, we live in a broken world. There isn't a perfect balance. There just isn't, because we live in a world tainted by sin, and that's in ourselves and in our kids and in our environment. And so we walk every day with the Savior who loves us, and each day he provides grace sufficient for that day. And we wake up each morning and his mercies are new. So learning to apologize and learning to ask for help are two of the most essential things, I think, for stay-at-home moms, to say sorry on the days that go bad with your kids and to ask for help from neighbors, from friends, to make sure you find community and plug in with your church, have girls who come over, and then start again tomorrow, because he is waiting, ready to walk with us.
Yeah, and one of the best pieces of advice I actually heard from my co-host dad, Gary Smalley, when my kids were so young and Gary was doing a lot of the marriage and family parenting DVDs and radio shows. I was making the bed, I remember. And he said, never let your child walk away with a closed spirit. He says, you're going to blow it at times, but when you see their little spirits shut down because you blew it, make sure you follow up and get their spirit back open again, whether that's an apology or let's talk about what just happened. But that really keeps a level of safety in the relationship. And to me, that was one of the best pieces of advice, because we are going to blow it. But to just care about their story enough, because the kids can forgive a lot when you're sorting it through and bringing closure to some of the tough moments that we all go through as a family,
Because we're modeling for our kids in those moments too, We're modeling that you're going to have hard days. You're going to have days where you lose your temper, but this is what you do afterwards. This is what it looks like. Look, mommy will show you,
mm-hmm.
because mommy had a bad day too. And I think it makes them feel normal on their bad days as well. Like, as parents, if we look perfect, I just think that would be crushing for our kids. Just in the same way as moms, we want to know that we don't have to be perfect as moms.
Yeah.
Same for our kids, to give them freedom to make mistakes and start again.
And to tell you the truth, coming from this vantage point, we'll have a lot more credibility with them in their teen and adult years when we own that early on, because otherwise they go through disillusionment,
Yeah.
We try to present an image. We just have a few minutes left, but I don't remember if this was a statement from your dad or you, but in the book it says, this is where the gospel lives, in the messy chaos of opening up our lives to others. I'd love for you to say a word about your dad, and I think it was his second wife, or Vonda.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Vonda.
Yeah, talk about just the ministry that God gave them and just the idea of the gospel being messy chaos of opening our lives to others.
Yeah, my father is 64, and he's remarried to a woman we just adore. Her name is Vonda, and he's 64 and now has 3 adopted kids the exact same age as my kids.
Wow.
And I just tell him he's setting the bar way too high for what I want to be doing in my 60s, And so between the two of them, they have their own kids, and then they have these adopted kids, and they have a bunch of kids that they foster, so their house is just a train station of children, and my kids think it's the best place to be. They still live in South Africa, so they're very involved there with the AIDS crisis in the orphan care community. And I remember talking to my dad one afternoon. We're surrounded by all these children. It's so loud. And he looks over at me and says, I've always wanted to be a preacher. My dad's a doctor, but he said he's always wanted to be a preacher. This is what he dreams of doing. But God keeps giving me children, is what he said. And I told him, Dad, that sounds like gospel to me. You know, that is where gospel lives. Jesus talks about love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And sometimes our neighbors look like these tiny little snot-nosed, whiny children. And we are called to love them as ourselves. And I watch my parents doing that and how they open their house and their lives. And it is messy. I mean, not just in a physical sense, but it's emotionally messy and it's challenging and it's difficult. But this is what it looks like. And I think Christ, when he hung on that cross, he opened his arms wide and adopted us into his family. You know, that's what it looks like, what he did for us, the mighty act of adoption on a cross. And so when I see my parents model that and how they choose to love these kids who haven't been loved by others, I'm reminded that it's in the mess that gospel lives. It really is. Christ came and moved into our messy, chaotic neighborhood and took on the itchy, scratchy skin of humanity and said, I'm going to do this here with you. I'm going to love you as myself.
And I just think our capacity to grasp that increases exponentially when we do the walk of mothering and fathering, of parenting, of getting into the lives of our kids, because we see what he did for us, at least on a somewhat greater level. Now, one of the things you say, one more question for you before we pray here. You said motherhood is a sacred marriage of the mundane and the eternal. Lisa Jo, how do you keep yourself encouraged when you feel swallowed up by the mundane?
Yeah. I think it's about choosing. You know, we get to choose. We're the boss of our feelings. And so there are going to be days where you feel swallowed up by the dishes or the laundry or the kid who got a bad report from his teacher again. But it's choosing to find the moments of eternal significance there. And sometimes they come at the end of a long day with someone in a bunk bed who shares something with you that's really meaningful and that you get to invest in. But motherhood is the long game, you know. Yeah. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you're going to have seasons, especially if you're a new mom, like I just want to let you off the hook, like almost don't feel like you have to aspire to anything great or have any, you know, big revelations. You just survive that first year, and if you make it through another day after day, you know, you're doing great. But as you start to emerge from the fog, you get a better picture of who these tiny human beings are that God has given to you. And you know you're getting a glimpse of eternity.
So good. Well, I've so enjoyed our time together. And as we wrap up, wondering if you would pray for that mom listening today who's weary in well-doing. Would you pray for her?
I would love to. Dear Jesus, I pray for your daughters today. Your daughters that you have entrusted, not forced, not obligated, not given the burden of, but entrusted the gift of motherhood. I pray for them that they would feel that you sing over them, that you delight them, and that you see them, whether it's 2 a.m. or 4 in the afternoon or the dreaded dinner hour again when everybody's fighting over the mashed potatoes. I pray that she will know that you see her and you say, well done, good and faithful servant. Thank you for how you love us, Jesus, and for how you model parenthood. We love you back. Amen.
Lisa Jo, thank you for your time today. It was a delight to talk with you.
Thank you for having me. It was such fun.
You are a dear sister. Title of her book, again, is Surprised by Motherhood.
Some rocks in my shoes, fears I wish I could lose. They make the mountains so hard to climb. And my heart gets so heavy with the weight of the world sometimes. And there's a bag of regrets, my should have been and not yet. I keep on dragging around. And I can hardly wait for the day I get to let all down.
Wow, great show today. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of today's show up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Give us a couple minutes. The podcast will be up. You can share it with a click of a button by Facebook, email, or Twitter. And I'll leave you with this. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.